Last week I preached a message entitled "The Mosaic Law Added and Abolished," and I mentioned that I wanted to use that message as an introduction to a series that I planned to begin this particular Sunday. Well, while preparing, this has happened before on one of the commandment series, while I was preparing the first message for this series, I came across some scriptures that I hadn't considered before in relation to that particular the subject matter for that particular series that I was planning to preach on. So I've postponed. Keep in mind what the introduction was last week, but I'm not sure if it'll be next week or when I'll get back to that series. I know you don't even know yet what I'm planning to do the series on. I have specifically even kept that secret or quiet up to this point in time, but that was an introduction. You can maybe try to figure out what it's on, but nonetheless, I'll have to refer back to that message because that message laid a foundation that needed to be laid. But at the same time, either God or just by happenstance, I came across some scriptures that might put a whole different light on that particular subject than what I had seen before. So I'm going to at least take the next week to do some more study on that particular subject. I want to make sure that I haven't been down the wrong track myself, and I'm willing to change if I have. So we're going to put that one on hold. So on to another subject. We've been told lately, and are continually being told, that communism is dead. Now, I don't know if they had a funeral or not. They buried it somewhere, but we're being told, aren't we, that communism is dead. Now, why do you think that our people are being told such an obvious lie? Now, I know it's not an obvious lie to a lot of our people, but it is an obvious lie. Our people have been trained to no longer be able to think on their own, so it's not obvious to most people. But once a person starts thinking about it, and especially if you've got Bruce McCarthy's tract on it, it's such an obvious lie. So why are people being told that? Well, I say obvious lie because if communism is dead, then those people living under a communist regime, including the good old USA, would no longer be regulated and controlled by the 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto. But of course, all 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto are in force and being enforced both in Russia, here in America, and of course in other places around the world as well. So obviously, communism is not dead. So why are our people being fed the lie that communism is dead? Well, do you think that it's just a coincidence that at about the same time that President Bush began openly promoting the New World Order, that communism was declared dead? Do you think that was just by happenstance, just by coincidence? I don't think it was at all. I think, like Roosevelt said many years ago, President Roosevelt, nothing happens in politics by chance. It's all pre-planned, at least if it has any impact at all upon what's going on in the world. Communism, of course, or what's been termed the evil empire, stood in the way of globalist aims. You couldn't have this evil empire out here if you were planning to have a global government, could you? Had you asked the majority of Americans in the past who America's greatest enemy was, they would have, who America's greatest enemy was or who provided the greatest threat to our freedom, they would have quickly declared to you that it was communism or the communists. However, now that the new age of global friendship is approaching, obviously the evil empire must be dismantled, at least in the minds of the American people. And you see, that's really all it takes. You don't have to dismantle it, as long as you've dismantled it in the minds of the people. Consequently, communism was simply declared dead. Nevertheless, let me declare to you that declaring something dead doesn't make it so. Lou, I'm sorry. You're dead. He may have some arguments about that. Now, see, obviously, I have declared him dead. And yet he laughs at me. He sits there and laughs at me when I declare him dead. And I think that's probably what the communists are doing at the majority of the of our people who swallowed the gullible lie. On the other hand, if I could convince a people that Lou was dead simply by declaring it so, I could accomplish nearly the same thing as if it were so in the minds of those people. Turn, if you would, to Isaiah chapter 5 and verse 13. Isaiah chapter 5 and verse 13. We've used it in other messages, but let's look at it again. Therefore, my people go into exile. I believe the King James Version, if you have it, uses captivity or slavery. Therefore, my people go into exile for their lack of knowledge, and their honorable men are famished, and their multitude is parched with thirst. Again, it says, therefore, my people go into exile, captivity, slavery, for the lack of knowledge. Note, for the lack of knowledge or understanding, people are enslaved. And isn't that exactly what's happening to our people today? Aren't they being led into a deeper captivity as a result of their lack of knowledge that communism is still flourishing? Because again, most of our people have accepted the lie. And as a result, they're going into exile, captivity, slavery, deeper and deeper. Not only does the lack of knowledge enslave people, but Hosea declared that we are also destroyed for the lack of it. Hosea 4 and verse 6, if you want to check it out. The Chinese philosopher and general Sun Tzu in the year 500 B.C. declared nearly the same thing when he stated this. Quote, if you know the enemy and know yourself, you need not fear the result of 100 battles. If you know yourself but not the enemy, for every victory gained, you will also suffer a defeat. And then he said, if you know neither the enemy nor yourself, you will succumb in every battle. End of quote. And of course, it's the last part of that statement that fits our people the best. They neither know themselves because they know not their heritage. It's been stolen from them. And our people, and everything in the power of the enemy is being focused on taking more and more and more of that away from them. They know not who they are. And of course, they know not who the enemy is. He's been declared dead. And even though they didn't attend the funeral, they accepted it as so. And as a result, we are being overpowered, overruled. We're losing the battle, every battle that we're facing, at least at this present time, as a people. You know, it's time our people are awakened to the fact that communism is well and alive and kicking. And in fact, it's kicking the daylights out of us. It's kicking down the doors of our freedom. As one preacher put it, communism may be dead, but the communists aren't. Well, part of the reason that we have been so easily convinced as a people that communism is dead is that though we have always had a great number of anti-communists in this country, very few have truly understood what communism really is, or have at least been brave enough to declare it. Maybe it's been more that way than the other, because I think probably most of them had the opportunity at least. I know of one man who used to go around with Kenneth Goff. How many know of Kenneth Goff? Some of you should. He wrote the book To Still Our Ancient Foe. Well, he went around for years with him. A preacher I used to work with as an evangelist down in Denver. He used to go around at least for a few years during the summers to many of his rallies and picket with him down in New York and different places. And yet, he wouldn't read the book To Still Our Ancient Foe. You see, he was an anti-communist, but he wasn't brave enough to declare it and didn't even want to know about it when it really came down to declaring and finding out what communism was really all about. Communism was often declared to be was often declared to be the greatest threat to Christian America. But let me ask you, is there possibly a greater threat? Is there a greater enemy, usually unidentified by the majority of anti-communists, an enemy standing behind communism that so many today are fearful of identifying? Well, I say yes, there is, and she can be identified and exposed, if she then can be identified and exposed, then let them declare communism dead. Because Christian America's real enemies will then be known. Who cares if they want to call communism dead? Let's expose who's really standing behind her, if indeed there is someone. You know, if communism is something other than just communism, then possibly the Bible can help us determine who or what it is. We know that the word communism cannot be found in the Bible. At least I've read it, you know, probably 30, 40 times completely through, not more times, in the last 20 years. And I've yet to find communism, actually, the word C-O-M-M-U-N-I-S-M, in the Bible. So, obviously, we know that it's not going to be found in the Bible. But can communism, under a different name, be found in the Bible? Well, if communism is to be found, she will have to be found by her description rather than by her name. So what are some of the identifying marks of communism? Well, here's three of them. One, her emblems are the hammer and the sickle. She is known as Red Communism. And thirdly, she is intensely anti-Christian. Now, are those identifying marks for communism found in the Bible? He said, well, how can they be? I mean, we're talking about documents that were written centuries, hundreds of years before communism ever came to be as a result of Karl Marx and his cronies. Well, could it be that there was a forerunner to communism, that communism was just another name, and a more modern name that was applied to something that indeed the Bible already discussed and dealt with? Well, you'd think if you can find those three identifying marks, and there are some others. For example, I won't deal with this one, but isn't one of the marks of communism world takeover? Globalism under their idea of it? Aren't they the ones who are truly promoting globalism today, the New World Order, so forth and so on? So there's other identifying marks, but let's just center around those three. If you can find those three identifying marks, and I picked three that you'd maybe think, at least a couple of them, you would think that maybe you really wouldn't find in the Bible. But if you can find them in the Bible, could it possibly be identifying a forerunner to what communism ended up to be? Can any or all of these marks be found in the Bible? Let's start with the hammer and the sickle. Does the Bible deal with the hammer and the sickle? I think probably most Christians and probably most preachers would tell you no, the hammer and the sickle isn't dealt with in the Bible. Well, I beg to differ with them, and I think Jeremiah, the prophet, would as well. Turn to Jeremiah chapter 50. Jeremiah chapter 50, and listen to, beginning with verses 14 through 16. Verse 14, it says, "Draw up your battle lines against Babylon on every side. All of you who bend the bow, shoot at her. Do not be sparing with your arrows, for she has sinned against Yahweh. Raise your battle cry against her on every side. She has given herself up. Her pillars have fallen. Her walls have been torn down. For this is the vengeance of Yahweh. Take vengeance on her. As she has done to others, so do to her." Verse 16, "Cut off the sower from Babylon and the one who wields the sickle at the time of harvest." And then jump down to verse 23. It says, "How the hammer of the whole earth has been cut off and broken, how Babylon has become an object of horror among the nations." Indeed, the hammer and sickle is mentioned by the prophet Jeremiah. And who is it related to? Babylon the Great. How about the color red? Communism is known as red communism. How about the color red? Turn to Revelation chapter 17. Revelation 17 in verses 3 through 5. It says, and he... let you get there. Verse 3. "And he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, and I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet beast." What color is scarlet? Remember old Scarlet O'Hare? What'd she wear? Isn't she wearing red? And that's not why she was called Scarlet. My wife is shaking her head. Well, anyway, what's the color scarlet? I got the movie wrong. I don't know if I've even ever seen the movie. My wife was shocked. I'd never seen Gone with the Wind. What's scarlet? Isn't it scarlet? Color of red? Sure it is. And the woman was clothed in purple and scarlet, and adorned with gold and precious stones and pearls, having in her hand a gold cup full of abominations of the unclean things of her immorality. And upon her forehead a name was written, a mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and of the abominations of the earth. And I saw the woman, oh, I don't want to jump down there yet, but there we have defined. We can see that also Babylon, the same identity before, Revelation note is mystery Babylon, that Babylon is also identified with the color red. That fits as well. And then how about being anti-Christian? Well, we just need to continue with the next three verses. Verses 5 through 6, it says, and again, upon her head a name was written, a mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and the abominations of the earth. Verse 6, and I saw the woman drunk, this woman identified as Babylon, and I saw the woman drunk with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the witnesses of Yeshua, and when I saw her, I wondered greatly. Indeed, Babylon is identified with the hammer and the sickle. She's identified with the color red. And she's identified as being intensely anti-Christian to the point of putting them to martyrdom. So, in Babylon, you could say, is found the description of communism. But someone will probably respond and say, so what? Babylon's been dead even longer than communism. Possibly. Or maybe both Babylon and communism are simply extensions of something or someone else. Could that be? Which does continue to live on just under different names. Obviously, Babylon became what was later known as communism. Could it be that there's been some other names that it's always lived under as well? Babylon is also known as the daughter of Babylon. Turn to Isaiah 47. Isaiah 47, we find here, come down and sit in the dust, O virgin daughter of Babylon. Sit on the ground without a throne, O daughter of the Chaldeans, for you shall no longer be called tender and delicate. And there's other places, there's four or five other places where Babylon is associated at least with the daughter of Babylon, or Babylon becomes the daughter of Babylon. Well, just who is the daughter of Babylon? Does the Bible possibly identify who she might be? Turn to Psalm 137. We're going to be doing a lot more flipping with the scriptures, so keep your fingers in working shape here. And I hope you're going to follow along with me because there's a progression of thoughts here and things that fit together. Psalm 137, verses 7 through 9. Who is the daughter of Babylon? Well, in this psalm, the psalmist identifies who she is. Verse 7, it says, remember, O Yahweh, against the sons of Edom, the day of Jerusalem, who said, raise it, to its very foundation. O daughter of Babylon, you devastated one, how blessed will be the one who repays you with the recompense with which you have repaid us. How blessed will be the one who seizes and dashes your little ones against the rock. Interesting. The sons of Edom are identified as the daughter of Babylon. So the daughter of Babylon is identified as being Edom. Also consider that not only was Babylon known for the color red, but so was Edom, wasn't she? Turn to Isaiah 63. Now, this, again, isn't something that you're going to get from, obviously, the average pulpit today, because the average pulpit could care less whether communism is dead or alive. They're only concerned with flying away. They're only concerned with going to heaven, spending eternity there. They're not concerned about what's going on around the world, so you're not normally going to get messages like this that's going to deal with and try to put these pieces of what could appear as a puzzle together to make them fit. But I think, indeed, you'll see that they do fit. And if you'll stay with me, you'll see how it all works out to today and what the plan has been all along and who, indeed, is behind it and who needs to be exposed as a result. Isaiah 63, in verses 1 and 2, it says, who is this who comes from Edom with garments of glowing, New American Standard says, King James says crimson, I believe, or at least it means crimson. With garments of crimson or red colors from Bozra, this one who is majestic in his apparel, marching in the greatness of his strength. It is I who speak in righteousness, mighty to save. Why is your apparel red? Who was it? Edom. Why was Edom's apparel red? Why was it at least identified as being red? Well, because that's what Esau, the father of the Edomite, means. In Genesis 25, 24 and 25, I'll just read this one, these next two to you. It says, when her days to be delivered were fulfilled, speaking of Rebekah, when her days to be delivered were fulfilled, behold, there were twins in her womb. Now the first came forth red all over, like a hairy garment, and they named him Esau. And then also in verses 29 and 30 it says, and when Jacob had cooked stew, Esau came in from the field, and he was famished. And Esau said to Jacob, please let me have a swallow of that red stuff there, for I am famished. Therefore, his name was called Edom. He was called Esau because he was red and hairy all over. And he was also called Edom because of his selling his birthright for a pot of red stew. Lentil stew is probably what it was. Edom also meaning red. So Babylon also equals Edom. Thus, simple logic provides that since communism equals Babylon in the scriptures and Babylon equals Edom, then Edom also equals communism, at least in one form or another. But now surely someone's going to declare that Edom has been dead at least as long as Babylon. So I guess we've had three funerals. They buried Edom, they buried Babylon, and they buried communism. I don't know about you, I wasn't invited to any of those funerals. And I don't expect to be, because again, I think it's been nothing but a mind game all along. Well, and of course, that's what the Edomites want you to believe, is that Edom has been dead as long or longer than Babylon. But that's only what they want you to believe. It's a great ploy if you think about it. Keep changing names, and your enemies may eventually lose track of you. And that's exactly what's happened. You see, Edom became Babylon. Babylon became communism, and communism has simply been renamed democracy. And in the whole process, the real enemies of Christianity have been lost in all the process. Now, why am I pointing this out? Most people believe that the Edomites, the descendants of Esau, have long past been extinct. Yet that's simply not true. There was another name change that the Edomites went through that most people are unaware of. Esau's descendants were generally or collectively known as Edomites. But who were the Edomites? Turn to Genesis 36. Genesis 36 and verses 1 through 3. Verse 1 it says, now these are the records of the generations of Esau, that is Edom. Esau took his wives from the daughter of Canaan, Adah the daughter of Elon the Hittite, and Oholibamah, the daughter of Anah, and the granddaughter of Zeboan, the Hivite. Also Basemath, Ishmael's daughter, the sister of Nabioth. The progeny of Esau in this passage are identified as four different peoples. At least they were half-breeds of Canaanites, Hittites, Hivites, and some Ishmaelites. Now, why am I pointing this out? Turn to Esther chapter 1 and verse 1, and I think you'll see. Or at least I can explain the reason for it. Esther chapter 1 and verse 1, here's what we find. It says, now it took place in the days of Ahasuerus, the Ahasuerus who reigned from India to Ethiopia over 127 provinces. Now, Esther 1:1 identifies this King Ahasuerus. If you've read Esther, you know how King Ahasuerus and his kingdom plays into the whole picture for the Israelites and what happened. I hope you've read it at some time. If you haven't, I encourage you to do so. Because it's a story, regrettably, that the imposters today who claim to be Israelites and who are not are using, when indeed it's a story that we should be using. Regrettably, because of the fact that the imposters want to use this, and they have a holiday that's geared around this very book of the Old Testament. There are many of our people who think that Esther should be completely taken out of the Bible. Yeah, let's just hand it to them on a silver platter. It's not their story. You know, I'm getting tired of letting them steal everything that belongs to us. The menorah. That's not a Jewish symbol. It's an Israelite symbol. Now, in this day and age, I'm not going to plan on using one, because who knows what people would accuse me of being. Or the rainbow, you know. There was people upset at one of Scriptures for America's camp, because behind the podium they had made a great big tapestry with a rainbow. And people were saying, man, that's the sign of the new age. And we were going to take it down. And then all of a sudden it hit me. I thought, hey, that's not the sign of the new age. They stole it from us. That was something God gave to Noah and our people as our sign. Well, it's the same with the book of Esther. God, Esther is not their book. Esther is our book. Anyway, in the first verse it says, now it took place in the days of Ahasuerus, that Ahasuerus, the Ahasuerus, who reigned from India to Ethiopia over 127 provinces, which encompassed the territory occupied by the Hittites, the Hivites, Jebusites, and Canaanites, collectively known as Edomites. And you say, well, what's that have to do with what you're saying? Well, you'll see. Turn to chapter 8, verse 17. Now, if you know the story, you know what's happened. In God's providence, he sent Esther to be queen. Was it simply for the elevation of Queen Esther, or for Esther to be queen, that God chose her to do so? No, if you know the story, it was God's providence. His foreknowledge was looking forward to the saving of the people of the Israelites, the Judahites, who also were a part of those provinces and scattered throughout them. And so he allows her to be elevated to the place of queen so that she can save her people. But there's this outlaw known as by the name of Haman, which we don't know for sure, at least in my mind. I can't remember if he's identified it with any particular race, but I'll guarantee you he had to have been one of those Edomites who hated the Israelites, just like his great-great-grandfather had, Esau, when he lost the blessing and lost the birthright to Jacob Israel. But he was the one who had coerced the king into this plan, this scheme to wipe out the Israelites. He was planning genocide of the Israelite race. But God watches over his own, doesn't he? And he raised up Queen Esther to save his people. And as a result of what happened in the providence of God, and God allowing so many things to happen in this beautiful story, the whole thing gets turned around. And Haman is hanged on the very gallows that he built for Esther's uncle, Mordecai. And then the whole picture is turned around so that the Edomites are not to go out and destroy the Israelites, but instead that the Israelites are to go out and destroy the Edomites instead. And as a result, we come to Esther 8 and verse 17. Now keep in mind that we're dealing with at least some of the descendants of Esau Edom, the Edomites. Verse 17, it says, and in each and every province and in each and every city, wherever the king's commandment and his decree arrived, there was gladness and joy for the Jews. Understand who we're talking about here. The Judahites. Consequently, a portion, two tribes of all Israel, Israelites. It says, there was gladness and joy for the Judahites, a feast and a holiday. And then the next verse says, and many among the peoples of the land became Jews, or known as Judahites. Now, obviously, they weren't Judahites by descent, but they became known as Judahites by name. For and then it says, for the dread of the Judahites had fallen upon them. The people of the land, the Edomites, who were fearful of extinction themselves because of King Ahasuerus' command, this document that was being circulated through the land, said, hey, we'd better tell everybody that we're Judahites. At least some of them figured that they'd better disguise themselves. They'd better take on the name of the Israelites of that area, the Judahites, and that they'd better probably start practicing the religion the Hebrew religion that the Judahites practiced in order so that they wouldn't have their heads cut off. And so we find Edomites becoming Judahites. Now, turn to, or in other words, the Bible documents a time when Edom went through another name change. That's the point. Here in Esther 8 and verse 17, those who we can trace back and understand were at least partly Edomites, went through a name change and became known as Jews or Judahites. Edom at the time of Esther became known as what? Jews. But that wasn't the only time it happened. It happened also later in history as well, which is not recorded in the scriptures, but is recorded by Jewish documents and also by historical documents. For example, in the Encyclopedia Judaica, volume 6, under the heading Edom, we find these words, quote, "In the days of John Hyrcanus," which is the end of the 2nd century B.C., ellipsis, "the Edomites became a section of the Jewish people." They had done it earlier at Esther's time, and now, nearing the end of the B.C. era, they're doing it again under the reign of John Hyrcanus. Also, the Jewish Encyclopedia, volume 5, under the heading Edom Idumea, it says this, they, speaking of the Edomites, or Idumeans, which they were also sometimes called, it says, they, quote, "they were then incorporated within the Jewish nation," end of quote. And then also the New Standard Jewish Encyclopedia declares basically the same thing. Again, under the heading Edom Idumea, it says, quote, "from then on they constituted," they again, the Edomites, "constituted a part of the Jewish people, Herod being one of their descendants," end of quote. And then also from Flavius Josephus in his Antiquities of the Jews, book 13, chapter 11, and verse 1, we find this. They, again speaking of the very same people, "were thereafter no other than Jews," end of quote. Again, we find the same people, Edom, Babylon, communism, going through another name change. They were being called Jews once again. In other words, the Edomites became a part of Jewry and have continued as a part of Jewry to this present day. And the Bible also forewarns us that they will continue to do the same thing. At least they were doing it at the time that John wrote the book of Revelation. Again, for most of you, this is old hat, but let me read you these two passages once again. Revelation chapter 2 and verse 9. It says, "I know your tribulation and your poverty, that you but you are rich, and the blasphemy by those who say they are Jews or Judahites and are not, but are a synagogue of Satan." 3:9 is almost the same thing. It says, "Behold, I will cause those of the synagogue of Satan who say they are Jews or Judahites and are not but lie. Behold, I will make them come down and bow down at your feet and to know that I have loved you." Again, we find it in Esther. We find it in the 2nd century B.C. and we find it in the 1st century A.D. when John writes the book of Revelation and talks about the imposters who declared to be Jews and who were not, who we also know had Edomite blood in them as well. And with that knowledge, it should come as no surprise if we were to discover that communism was the brainchild of modern Jewry, that is Esau Edom. Because Esau Edom became a part of modern Jewry, and eventually they are what constitutes 9/10+% of the people who call themselves Jews today. It was simply another name change that people have missed through the history of the scriptures and the history of our secular history. Again, it shouldn't come as no surprise if we were to discover that communism was the brainchild of modern Jewry, that is Esau Edom, the avowed enemies of Christian Israel, that is Christian Celto-Saxon. Could it be true that behind communism stands modern Jewry? Well, if you don't already know the answer, you'll have to wait for proof or the evidence, which unquestionably, undeniably proves that very fact. And with that being true, as we end this message, keep in mind that communism may be dead, but Judaism hasn't yet been buried. she stands behind that and so many other false fronts, as it spoke of in Revelation, as John wrote, Mystery Babylon, the mother of the harlots, like an octopus with tentacles stretching everywhere. Who was Mystery Babylon? Who was the daughter of Babylon? Well, in the Bible, she's clearly identified as being Esau Edom. And Esau Edom went through those name changes, which pulpits across this land will never identify for you, for either fear of the Jews or because they've been infiltrated by the Jews. But Esau Edom then became modern Jewry, as identified, as testified to by the Jews themselves. Could she be standing behind communism? She's dead, you have to say. Could she have been standing behind communism? Well, communism isn't dead, because Judaism still lives, and indeed she does stand behind communism today. We'll pick it up in the next message and prove to you, if you don't already know or have the proof, that indeed communism is simply the brainchild of modern-day Jewry. Let's stand and we'll close in prayer. Our Heavenly Father, again we're thankful for your word, for your goodness, for your truths that can be found by those who will seek, knock, and ask for the door to be opened. Father, we do pray that you'd, Father, reveal to many others the truth of your word. Father, reveal to them that, Father, our enemies haven't died, they haven't been buried, but they still live. As Kenneth Goff once wrote titled his book, 'Tis Still Our Ancient Foe. Father, it hasn't changed, it's changed names, but the foe remains the same. Let our people understand it, let them awaken, Father, so that we can once again take dominion back for you instead of turning it over to the enemies of Christ. We're thankful for your goodness and mercies, and we pray these things now in and through and by Yeshua the Christ our Lord. Amen.